Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Poet laureates are government-appointed figures whose voices not only promote poetry, but often reflect and speak to the current sentiment of the country. Past U.S. poet laureates include Mark Strand, Billy Collins, Philip Levine, and Juan Felipe Herrera. Joy Harjo is the current U.S. poet laureate. Texas has had its own poet laureates since 1932. San Antonio became the first Texas city to name its own poet laureate. Carmen Tafoya was appointed to serve from 2012 to 2014. Other San Antonio poets who have served their two-year terms include Lorian Guerrero, Jenny Brown, and Octavio Quintanilla, the current San Antonio poet laureate. Quintanilla's term wraps up this year. He's an associate professor in the College of Arts and Sciences at Our Lady of the Lake University in San Antonio. Later in our conversation, he talks about how his life changed when he was introduced to the power of the written word. But first, Quintanilla explains the surprise he felt when he was selected as San Antonio's fourth poet laureate 2 years ago.
I'm originally from the Rio Grande Valley, so in 2018, I think it was I was going on my fifth year living here. So I had met one of the requirements, you know, to have lived here for at least 4 years in the city. The city's, it's full of wonderful poets. So I was very surprised that I was selected. But at the same time, I knew that my nomination was competitive too. Yeah.
So it's a 2 year position, mm-hmm. and it's already coming to an end. Do you feel right. that these 2 years have just come and gone so quickly?
Yes. I was just talking to a friend of mine about that, and he asked me, you know, what are you going to do now?
What you've always done, probably.
Yeah, what I've always done. But now I can say that I was, I guess, the former poet laureate of San Antonio. I guess once a poet laureate, once you hold this type of title, you're always a poet laureate, right? I mean,
it's like you're always going to be a former president.
Yeah. I mean, the honor, you always carry that honor with you, especially if you did a good job. And I feel that it's been an amazing learning experience. And being poet laureate has offered me a platform to do a lot of work close to my heart.
And so what is some of that work you've done in the last couple of years?
Well, more than anything, visiting schools, elementary schools, high schools, colleges, universities, and to represent, right, not only my community, but also represent an art that's often misunderstood or people don't give it a chance to understand. You know, that was part of my commitment to go out and celebrate the written word and the our oral stories and all those things that humanizes.
Well, there probably are, you know, those kids in school, they haven't discovered poetry. They don't realize that maybe there's that little spark in them that is still waiting to light. And sometimes, you know, you have that quiet kid in the background. Mm-hmm. How do you inspire that kid sitting in the back of the class that maybe poetry is something that is going to change that person's life?
Right. Well, I was that kid. I was that quiet kid in the back. I was that kid that whenever somebody visited our classroom, either as elementary student, undergrad, or even grad student, I was that kid that wanted to learn from those speaking. And every time I go to a classroom, I always keep an eye for that kid or those kids who don't say anything, but you know they're listening and they're taking you in and they're taking your message in. You know, who's to say maybe 5, 10, 20 years from now, they'll remember that in the same way that I remember figures and people that I have come to visit in the class.
Was there one person or one particular work that you can point to sort of being a turning point in your life saying, this is what I want to do, mm-hmm. even though maybe, Mijo, you probably should think mm-hmm. of becoming a lawyer, a doctor. Right. What is being a poet going to right. make you pay the bills?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I have always, you know, had an artistic spark. You know, I tried painting. You know, in my 20s, I used to paint abstract art. I knew I had no future in it, so I tried music. I knew I had no talent.
But you had the artistic bent.
Yeah. But I think I was just trying to discover the means to say what I felt. And I always kept returning to writing. And so I knew I was going to write. I was going to be a writer, and I was going to be a novelist. I loved poetry, but I was not writing poetry in my formative years. I was writing stories, you know. And then when I got to high school, I started reading Dostoevsky and Albert Camus and all the French writers and Russian writers, and I just fell in love with that. I would buy a book or get a book from the library, and I'll spend weeks just carrying the book around because I wanted to feel its weight, because I knew I didn't want to finish it. I didn't want to start because I didn't want to finish it. I wanted to write novels. And not until I started going for my master's, and I would write poetry, obviously, but when I started working on my master's, Raul Salinas, the late Chicano poet Raul Salinas, came to visit one of my poetry classes. And this is maybe, I don't know, 2-3 years before he passed away. And his life story, his sense of social justice, his commitment to his community and to the written word and to the spoken word, the way he evoked that sense to me that all those things mattered and that they made a difference in people's lives, I think that's when I realized that, hey, you know what, even though I'm teaching right now, even though I have a job, he kind of gave me permission to do what I'm doing now, to go for it and say, you know what, at the end of the day, if it doesn't work out, I can always go back to teaching high school or always go back to working construction or whatever, right? I mean, as kids, you know, sometimes we have this fear that if you don't do X and Y in a specific order, you're going to fail or you have a higher risk at failing, and it doesn't work that way. And I wish I knew that sooner, you know. And I think that's why I live the way I live now, you know, making choices that make me happy at the end of the day, you know, with not only with my personal life, but also with my work.
And so I know poetry, a lot of poets who I've met with and who I've heard past interviews with, their work is very personal.
Right.
And I find this with writers more so, and those especially writers who deal more in memoir or poetry than any other art, where they really do talk very honestly and unabashedly about their lives.
Right.
Did you, when you first started writing more personal things, sort of have an obstacle you needed to bust through in order to do that? Or did it come naturally just to write about personal struggles, et cetera?
Right. No, it's a process for me. Well, for me, it was a process. Even though I was born in Texas, I lived in Mexico until I was 9. And when I was like 9, my brother and I came to live with my grandmother in Westlake, Texas, to go to school. We were U.S. citizens, right? So it was time to come to school. And so my parents stayed behind, and my siblings, my younger siblings, stayed behind. And obviously, because of economics, we couldn't see each other as much as we would want to. It was really hard for me to write about that dislocation, you know, dislocation in terms of geography, family, emotional. And my first book, If I Go Missing, the new book that I'm writing, it's a poetry memoir, was everything I wanted to write in the first book, but I couldn't write. I was not ready. I didn't know how to approach the subject without sounding too sentimental. But I think more than anything, I just didn't have the language to talk about that type of loss. And so now, maybe 3 years ago when I started writing my new poems, I realized that I have to write about it. And I think now I feel comfortable writing about that type of experience, you know. Before, I was writing about it. But I wasn't writing about it in the same way that I am now. There's less metaphor, let's put it that way.
Octavio Quintanilla is San Antonio's 4th Poet Laureate. His term expires this year. When we come back, Quintanilla talks about thinking and writing in Spanish and how that applies to his current passion project.
And so in 2018, writing in Spanish became a project. I would once again try to relearn what I lost. You know, for me, writing's about loss.
More with Octavio Quintanilla is next on Fronteras.
Support for this podcast comes from Sunshine Cottage's Noche del Sol, a fiesta kickoff event with Mexican food, entertainment, and deloritas, plus a raffle and auctions to benefit the School for Deaf Children, March 26th, 6 p.m. More at sunshinecottage.org.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Octavio Quintanilla is wrapping up his two-year term as the City of San Antonio's fourth Poet Laureate. His 2014 poetry collection is called If I Go Missing. It explores displacement, physical, cultural, and lingual. Those are also topics explored in Quintanilla's visual poems. His frontextos blend illustration with poetry and allow him to explore the writing process. His frontextos are anywhere from a few words written on the edge of a page to a lengthy handwritten scribble in Spanish, and the art can range from an abstract color scribble on a notepad to black and white petroglyph-like drawings. Quintanilla explains the genesis of the project.
In 2018, I challenged myself to write something every day. You know, as you know, I teach at Our Lady of the Lake University. My teaching load is 4-4, committees, family, personal life. At the end of the day, I would tell myself, I don't have time to write. It was just an excuse. So January the 1st of 2018, I challenged myself to write something every day. I bought some notebooks, and I started with this type of notebook. It's the moleskin that supposedly Hemingway used and other writers used, so it was a natural fit. So every day I challenge myself to write something. And the first frontextos, which is a blending of two words, frontera and texto, border and text. And obviously I wanted to come up with a concept that was new. At first, it was a lot of text. And in the first frontexto, I doodled. I think it was like a snail and some stars, and I liked it, and I kept the erasures, you know, the scratching out, the blackouts, where I was correcting myself and editing myself, and I liked that. So every day I would do one, and another thing that I wanted to do was to post it on social media, specifically Facebook, every day. I was very interested in process, and now looking back, I can see the process. You know, often writers, we talk about process, and it can become an abstract thing. And often writers don't even talk about their personal process. We want to keep it hidden. You know, I'm not going to show you how I do work. You're going to steal it or whatever. And in my case, I'm like, no, I love that process. And I love the all the turns you can take on the page, you know, and still come out with something that might be poetic. And obviously, I don't like everything I do. But you know, in terms of the whole thing, there's probably maybe 20 good poems in 3 years, you know. But that's the thing. I think it's a healthy thing, you know, and doing that every day opens up your senses. You start looking at the world in a different way. You know, you start hearing better, looking at patterns in a more focused way, because you might discover something that you might use. And so I started blending text and image. And right now, since the beginning of this year, I've been doing a semic writing, poetry. A semic writing is writing that has no semantic meaning. It's markings, it's gesture with a hand, you know, on the page. And as a writer, you get to the point where you look for new ways to say what you feel, because maybe the language that you have at this point, it's either boring or it's not doing anything for you. And so I turned to that. I turned to, I don't know, I think it's something very primitive and at the same time, very human.
So I've seen from some of the frontextos, going back to the frontextos, that you write a majority of those in Spanish. And I'm thinking about your process. I know a lot of us who are bilingual, we pick a language in which we think. Mm-hmm. If you think in Spanish, Spanish is your predominant language. And you know, when I grew up, Spanish was my first language. Right. And my mom said as soon as they started going to school, I knew they started thinking in English because that's when English overtook it all. Mm. And so if I were to pick up a pen and try to write something in Spanish, I would struggle a bit because I need to overcome that and translate everything. Right. So when you are putting thoughts on the page, do they come to you in Spanish?
Mm. Oh, that's a great question. I think it has to do with... It's the essence of the whole project. Once you cross the border, once you cross the Rio Grande, everything you are stays behind. In my case, my family, my friends, and my language. Not too long ago, I realized that I have a third grade education in Spanish because that's the time when I left over here. You know, yes, I know how to speak Spanish. I know, you know, survival Spanish. I know home Spanish. I know, Frontera Spanish, but one thing I realized is that I didn't know academic Spanish, and I realized that when I got invited to go speak at a conference with writers who were writing in Spanish and who were mostly from Mexico or Latin America, and I realized I don't know that Spanish. I'm not familiar with it. And so in 2018, writing in Spanish became a project. I would once again try to relearn what I lost. You know, for me, writing's about loss. And I think that's as personal as I probably ever get. For me, writing's about loss because I'm trying to recover everything I've lost through writing. And so in 2018, I started writing in Spanish. And then for me, it just became also a political statement, you know, specifically nowadays when people who speak Spanish are being attacked either verbally or physically because they speak Spanish. I need a little bit of time to go back and forth. Right now, I'm thinking in English. I'm not thinking in Spanish. And so once I sit down with my notebook to write in Spanish, I have to kind of take a couple of minutes so I can start thinking. So my body feels in Spanish, so my senses see in through that lens, that language. And what's interesting is that during the breaks, you know, when I'm not in the classroom, there's been times when, maybe like after a summer, I go back to the classroom in the fall, at the beginning of semester, and I'm thinking in Spanish and I'm trying to translate myself to lecture. And my students look at me like, huh? And that's when I realize, oh, God, you know. And I tell them, I'm translating myself because I'm thinking in Spanish. And then I just, you know, give myself a little bit of space, time. And then, okay, now I'm going to.
Well, I have to ask you now, if there's anything that maybe you wanted to share with our listeners, maybe read an excerpt of your poetry, or if you have a poem you'd like to share, English or Spanish, whatever is most comfortable for you.
Yeah. I'll read a poem from my book, If I Go Missing, and it's called Sonnet for Human Smugglers. Take care of them. If they want water, dump them in the river. If they crave freedom, let them loose among rattlesnakes. If they want to breathe, let them breathe dust. Let the desert mouse nest in their white bones. Give them shelter with your greed, with your rape. The roadkill is a sign you're almost home. Point to it and show them who they are. Their life is a documentary, a newscast. But for you, everything is possible. You're the map that leads them astray. Priest leading a funeral procession. Load this cargo. Break them with promises. Backaches that keep them from killing you.
What was on your mind when you wrote that?
Probably all the horrible narratives of immigrants trying to cross the border and being misled by coyotes, dying in Falfurrias, all those narratives, you know, of people trying to reach the American dream, come to the United States, do good for their families, do good for themselves. And yet often they are misled, lied to. Often they die.
You know, and it's instances like that where I think the arts – plays a pretty crucial role in illuminating those stories, because you can read an article about it in the paper, mm-hmm. but when you see a person maybe sharing that story mm-hmm. with you, or you hear a poem about it, or you hear a song about it,
right.
that casts a different light on that subject.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And I think that's why there's a reference to this idea that often we don't see them as humans, you know, we just see them on the news. And then, you know, it's a 30-second brief, news brief, and then it's gone, you know. And I think those of us who create art, those of us who write, I think we often do it with a faith that is going to outlast all of us to keep telling that story that needs to be told.
Octavio Quintanilla is an associate professor in the College of Arts and Sciences at Our Lady of the Lake University in San Antonio. His first book of poetry is the 2014 collection, If I Go Missing. Quintanilla is San Antonio's fourth poet laureate. His term expires this year. Find Quintanilla's Frontextos on his Facebook page. San Antonio's fifth poet laureate was named just this week. She's Andrea Vocab Sanderson, the city's first African-American poet laureate. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Ben Henry is our podcast producer, and Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.